Welcome to the Moses Organic Farming Podcast. My name is Chuck Anderis. Before we begin, I have a couple announcements. First, we are hosting farmer chats online to follow up on some of our episodes. The next one is Wednesday, April 29th at 2 p.m. Central Time, following up on our episode on mental health. We have another scheduled for Wednesday, May 6th at 2 p.m. Central Time to follow up on episode 4, Produce Safety and COVID-19. Links to register are in the show notes. We are also organizing grower groups, so if you're a farmer, we can help you find like-minded people. For example, I was talking to a farmer yesterday who has gotten in touch with a few other folks who are interested in virtual fencing for grazing, so we're going to work together to build a network. We can help organize you in your local area or by any interest you might have. The groups are for you and can be whatever you need them to be. You could organize to solve a problem, learn from other farmers, start a cooperative, or just support each other through strange and difficult times. If you want to get involved, call me at Moses or email me at chuck@mosesorganic.org. Now, on to the show. Today, our focus is livestock. I spoke with Bobby Wilson, Government Relations Associate for the Wisconsin Farmers Union, to hear about policy changes, markets, and their effects on livestock farmers. Then I called up organic grass-fed dairy farmer Kevin Mahalko. In addition to farming full-time, Kevin is also a dairy grazing apprenticeship educator, the president of Grassworks, and a Moses Organic Specialist, among other things. Let's get to it. Hey, Bobby.
Hi, Chuck.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Thanks for being here today.
Sure. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Yeah, so let's get right into it. What would you say is the biggest issue with dairy and the coronavirus pandemic?
Well, the biggest issue for dairy farmers is the impact this is having on prices. So when this pandemic hit, we saw a major disruption in the markets that dairy farmers are selling into. We lost a lot of markets from restaurant closures and school closures, and also export markets that were impacted by this. So suddenly we find ourselves in a situation where we have more milk on the market than we can sell or export, and that has had a major impact on the prices that farmers are paid for their milk. So to give you an example, in January, farmers were being paid about $18.50 for every 100 pounds of milk, and now the price is dropping precipitously down to $12. So we're seeing, you know, close to a 40% decline in prices for farmers, and that's having a major impact on their income and their ability to plan for this growing season and to run their businesses.
So those are conventional milk prices, right?
Those are conventional milk prices.
What do you think is the average cost of production for 100 weight for conventional milk?
It varies based on farm size, so we have a pretty wide range. But for a lot of farmers, we hear that between $17 and $19 is where their cost of production usually falls. So to make that work on $12 is just impossible.
And pretty close to impossible the way the prices were in January.
Right. Already it was, you know, break even or maybe making a little bit of money in January. So, and this is the best price that we've seen in 5 years, or the January price was the best price that we had seen in 5 years. We were just coming out of a 5-year economic downturn, or what we referred to as the dairy crisis, where farmers were going out of business in huge numbers every year. And those who were still milking cows were struggling to make ends meet and living on prices that were between, you know, $13 and $15 on a pretty steady basis for a 5-year period. So just in Wisconsin, in 2019 alone, we lost over 800 family dairy farms, which is an enormous number. It's about 10% of our total.
Wow. And what are the structural drivers that were causing all those farms to go out of business?
The structural issues in dairy are just that we have an uncoordinated dairy supply chain. We see sort of these boom and bust cycles in dairy where we have enormous oversupply of milk. We call it sort of the treadmill of overproduction, that when the price is low, farmers want to milk more cows because they need to make up for that lost income. And then when the price comes back up a little bit, they milk more cows because they need to make up for the down periods and take advantage of that higher price. And so the banker is telling farmers to add more cows to make their balance sheet look better. And then that floods the market even more and sends the price down even further. And then farmers have to milk more cows to get out of it. So we've been on this treadmill for a long time. We're seeing that many of the smaller farms, particularly that have higher costs of production, are going out of business. And the trend for decades has been fewer and fewer farms of much larger size. And those farms are able to withstand some of these low price periods better than the smaller farms and continue to flood the market with excess milk. And that's driving some of the other farms out of business.
What does a more resilient dairy system look like, or more resilient for family scale farms, I guess?
Well, something that a lot of groups have been calling for and that Wisconsin Farmers Union has been calling for a very long time, but with greater emphasis over the last couple of years through our Dairy Together movement, is a national program to balance the milk supply to meet the demand, and not only to meet the demand, but to meet profitable demand, to make sure that we're not selling into markets at a loss for our farmers. We need to make sure that we have a system, a mechanism in place that tells farmers to pump the brakes when the price is low. And that's saying there's too much milk on the market. We need to slow down production a little bit. And then as demand increases, we can increase production along with that to follow that increase in demand, rather than right now we have farmers that are adding cows, expanding their herds without any relationship to the amount of milk that we have on the market already or the amount of demand that we have. So the only way to really coordinate the actions of all of these different farmers, or the independent business decisions of all these different farmers, is through a national system of managed growth that applies to all farmers across the country and that coordinates the supply chain in a way that keeps those prices higher and more stable for everybody.
Yeah. And so I think that this problem is kind of hitting the national psyche a bit, because people have been having really visceral reactions to watching a bunch of milk be dumped out of a truck into a field while there's shortages at food banks and people are going hungry. So the pandemic is accelerating this.
Absolutely. This is more of an immediate shock that we couldn't have anticipated, 6 months ago. But certainly if we had a supply management or a growth management system in place before this happened, we would be a little bit more nimble and better able to respond to a shock like this. And we wouldn't see such a nosedive in milk prices, or at least we would have some tools already in place to help mitigate the impacts of that without having to rely so heavily on federal aid programs and direct payments from the federal government to keep our farmers going through this crisis.
What federal programs are out there already, and what is still to be decided about how that money is spent?
Well, just a couple weeks ago, Congress authorized the CARES Act, which is a federal stimulus package, a $2 trillion federal stimulus package. And there are a couple of carve-outs in that for agriculture. So we have $9.5 billion that has been earmarked for assistance to farmers whose markets have been impacted by COVID-19. So that money is going to specialty crop producers, livestock producers, and dairy farmers to help compensate for lost revenue. There is an additional $14 billion that was added to the Commodity Credit Corporation, which is a pool of money that the USDA has authority to use for purchasing surplus commodities and running other programs within the USDA to help influence commodity prices.
And what of that still needs to be decided? How it is spent?
Sure. So the USDA has the authority to allocate the funds that were authorized under the CARES Act however they see fit. They have pretty broad authority to use that money to help farmers in whatever way they think will be most beneficial. So the decisions about how that money will be used, for example, how much is going to support dairy farmers, or how much is going to compensate farmers who are selling into farmers markets or other direct market channels, those decisions are still being made, and they're being made very quickly. There have been a number of different asks from different organizations about how those funds should be distributed and how much should go to each sector of the agricultural economy. That has yet to be determined. What has happened so far is that Congress has said, here is a big pool of money, U.S. Department of Agriculture, distribute that to help farmers based on input from stakeholders and under your own discretion.
Okay, so what should farmers do to try to influence that?
So farmers can contact the U.S. Department of Agriculture directly to make requests for how the funding should be used. They can also still contact their members of Congress because our members of Congress are still weighing in with the USDA about what they're hearing from farmers in their own districts and in their own states about how that money should be allocated. So certainly reach out to your lawmakers and share your stories about how you're being impacted by this and what you think it's going to take to make your business whole again, or to at least allow you to see it through to the other side. Because what we don't want is for a crisis like this to push our farmers out of business, because that would have such a long-term impact on our rural economy and on our food system.
Yeah, and you can be sure that the large corporate dairies are getting in contact with their lawmakers.
Sure, and there are organizations that represent farmers. You know, Wisconsin Farmers Union is having these conversations and sending letters to the Wisconsin Congressional Delegation and to the USDA, but it's really hard sometimes to make sure that your voice is loud enough and that your needs are being prioritized as these decisions are being made very quickly. So as much as you can connect with other organizations and help share your story and add to those conversations, and add to our collective voice, the better.
Yeah, so up till now, we've mostly talked about the conventional market, and I know that the organic and conventional markets are pretty tied to each other as far as dairy goes, but how is this specifically affecting organic and pasture-based systems?
So nobody is insulated from this crisis, and while the prices for organic dairy haven't been impacted quite as much as the conventional prices, they're still feeling the squeeze from this, and we don't really know what kind of supply chain disruptions we might see in the future if we have plants that need to close or workers who become sick and things like that. So certainly the impacts on organic farmers are still there as well, although they do seem to be faring a little bit better, at least right now. One impact that really everyone is feeling is the increase in input costs. So as we're seeing a strain on some of our suppliers that supply agricultural products, farmers are having to pay more for the products that they need every day. They might have to wait a little bit longer to get products that they need. So that's certainly something that impacts organic as well as conventional farmers.
Do you think that the higher profit per cow of pasture-based systems can help to make those farms more resilient to big price fluctuations like this?
It certainly can help, but in other ways, sometimes pasture-based farms are more dependent on some of the direct markets that have been impacted. So we have a lot of pasture-based meat producers that are selling directly to restaurants, or they're selling directly to consumers through farmers markets, and that's where they're able to set their own price for their products, and those markets are being severely disrupted. So in some ways, they're more vulnerable at a time like this, but they can be more resilient because we're seeing home delivery options, and we're seeing some of the creativity and control over more of the supply chain that these farmers have, and they're able to adjust and respond in the face of a crisis like this. With pasture-based systems in particular, I mentioned the increased input costs earlier that all farmers are seeing. In general, pasture-based systems have fewer inputs and lower input costs, and so they're a little bit more resilient to some of these increases in prices for the supplies that farmers rely on. So I think that definitely those types of farms are in a better position to be able to withstand this crisis. But that is not to say that they don't also need some sort of aid from the federal government, that they shouldn't also be covered in the programs that are being authorized and the funding that is being authorized from the USDA.
In a normal price downturn, farmers will often cull cows and sell them on the beef market. So how has that been affected?
So right now we're seeing a squeeze in livestock markets because we have processing plants that are closing or limiting their processing capacity right now. So it might be a little bit harder for farmers to get their meat to market. So this might not be a great time to try to sell into the beef market if you're a dairy farmer and you want to cut back some of your milk production, because we're also seeing low prices in the beef market and that supply chain is also being squeezed right now. We just heard about hog plants in Colorado that are being closed because a number of workers tested positive for COVID-19. And these risks are really everywhere throughout the supply chain. So it's not a guaranteed strategy, or it's not necessarily a safe bet to try to send a bunch of cows onto the beef market right now because of an incentive to reduce supply or having to dump milk. You might want to think about other ways to cut back on your milk production if that's what you're trying to do.
That makes me think of how so much of federal agricultural policy, and in the exact words of Sonny Perdue, is to get big or get out. And just seeing how the consolidation of so much of the industry makes it more susceptible to big disruptions like this. Do you think this is maybe an opening for small and mid-sized farms to start building those supply chains back?
Yeah, I think this crisis has really illuminated some of the problems with having a highly consolidated agricultural economy, that when something like this happens, we are less resilient and less able to respond when we have just a few very large farms that are spread out across the country. We're pooling that risk among a few players. So if something happens to one farm, then that will cause more of a disruption throughout the supply chain than if we have our food being produced in multiple areas and we have more local and regional supply chains to get those products to consumers. And I think we're seeing that with the lack of milk on the shelves, that our food travels such long distances to get to the grocery store, that when we have a disruption like this, it can really have a large impact on the retail side of things. But certainly I think that this is an example of why pooling risk is dangerous to the entire food system.
Do you have any other things you'd like to add?
I guess I would just say that we have an opportunity right now not only to try to get through this crisis, but to think about what we're going to do after this pandemic is behind us, to make sure that we are not in such a vulnerable place and that our food system isn't in such a vulnerable place the next time we see some challenge or some disruption like a pandemic or some other shock to our economy. So hopefully we will take from this the lessons of how to distribute the risk throughout the agricultural economy better than we have been, and to create a more resilient food system that can withstand moments of crisis like this.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thanks again to Bobby Wilson from the Wisconsin Farmers Union. If you're not already a member, consider joining the Farmers Union in your state to strengthen our collective voice on issues that affect family farms. Go to nfu.org/join. After speaking with Bobby, I called up Moses Organic Specialist Kevin Mahalko to get his take on it.
Hey Kevin, how's it going?
Hi Chuck, it's going pretty well today. It's spring is definitely here now.
Yeah, I spent quite a bit of lunchtime outside running around with my kids, so that was quite a bit of fun.
It's finally, you know, they're not going to get completely covered in mud and everything right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a bit rough for a while there. Every time we came back in, we had to clean them off pretty thoroughly.
Sure.
But so yeah, what did you think of the interview with Bobby Wilson?
Well, she is incredibly detailed because I listened to it about 3 different times. She's definitely more program aware than I am, to be, you know, just to be completely blunt about it. I can give it from a farmer's perspective, the whole thing of like doing your production, trying to keep informed on the news and so many things happening. I mean, it's literally every day, just I wake up and I have like all the morning ag clips, the USDA reports and all this, and we're just trying to keep informed, you know, basically. But also with on the organic side, it seems like the demand is there because, you know, people are looking for some health options, and the organic market is geared more toward, you know, direct to the consumer rather than the food service. Although the, you know, food service is definitely important. It's not the dominant part of the organic market though.
Right, so it hasn't necessarily hit the organic market as much as it has the conventional market.
Right. Where we've been pretty fortunate is the, you know, just being on the dairy side, there has been a pretty strong demand for organic dairy. So as everything I'm hearing is that they're utilizing, you know, a pretty high amount of the organic milk now, which is good.
Okay, so you don't anticipate having to dump any milk or anything?
No, and I guess our biggest, you know, fear, you know, seeing what's happening in the conventional markets is if that has if conventional doesn't get some kind of support or emergency aid, if they have to have a, you know, price drop, then organic typically has to stay within some range of conventional. So we could see problems there. And I think the biggest worry is that with the economy, you know, being on hold and so many people losing their work and, you know, livelihood, that, you know, we don't want to see anybody suffering, but we also need to have that consumer base that, you know, is willing to pay for a lot of the added costs and I would say like the integrity of organic. So it's definitely a two-way win-win in my opinion, but you have to have like a fairness for both the consumer and the farmer.
So one of the things that she talked about affecting conventional farmers a lot was increased price and decreased availability of inputs.
Yes.
Have you seen that affect you at all? Or
it's been a trend just over the last several years where especially like steel prices, and that happened maybe 2 years ago. All the equipment, if you're looking to buy any type of farm equipment, it's much higher, you know, maybe 20% higher. So things that we would typically replace every so often are like, you know, maybe some dairy equipment or feeding equipment and that type of thing. So we've noticed like the parts prices are higher too if we need to repair items. And I think also with the economy has been on a pretty decent trend for a number of years, but it's made definitely a labor shortage in the farm world. So, you know, the people that I could typically hire, you know, have been very busy with their other jobs. And sometimes they're almost, you know, helping me out on the farm, you know, maybe a day just because they like farming and want to stay connected with farming. So that's been kind of an interesting, you know, point, is that we need to be very efficient in our labor and jobs, you know, around the farm, because it's really, at the end of the day, it's just, you know, us on the farm that have to get everything done. And I think that's, you know, that's also even more so with the COVID-19 and people not being able to obviously travel as much and all that.
Have you applied to any of those programs, like the Paycheck Protection Program or anything through the CARES Act?
I personally haven't yet. We'll be applying for that paycheck protection that everybody's been getting. I don't think we need to do the small business loan right now. We've thankfully been, you know, pretty secure, at least in getting our organic milk payments. The thing that's concerning me is like the livestock end of it. I've already had, at least where I direct market beef, I've had one family that literally lost their, you know, any business income, so they just can't afford to buy anything right now in quantity. So there is some of that happening. I know there's been some positive thing of, you know, consumers searching out farmers, but also there are the economic impacts of the consumers just not having the available income right now. And then on the side of us trying to sell like our cows or beef to a market, they've all been affected. If they're ending up at an auction, there's limited buyer space. You know, people just don't have the physical access to the auction. They've switched it to a lot of online auction. But the biggest thing is that the prices for livestock have really dropped all around for a number of factors. And, you know, some of that is even they've had some problems in processing plants. So it's a pretty wide scale worry that, you know, we really need to have better resilience in our system and a lot of backups, more than I think what we have right now.
What kind of backups are you thinking of?
I just think that the whole local food movement and the connection to the consumer has to be emphasized even more. It's really been brought out to light now, where we have so very few meat processing plants in the country. We've had a pretty good resurgence, you know, on a smaller scale with all the, you know, custom processing and butchering. And that's become, you know, kind of an art form or a really nice market for a lot of grazers and organic, you know, livestock farmers. So the need out there is that we have much more capacity, more people getting trained to be a licensed butcher so that we can have more direct sales and have the capacity. Because right now I did call our local butcher and we basically have a waiting list till about, I think, one in end of June, and then the next one we could do is in August. So definitely need more capacity.
you bring all your direct market beef to a local butcher then?
Yes, we've had a couple of local processors that we've worked with for, you know, many years. You know, we have our own label, and then we can, you know, just, we just know what the quality of work they do is just really excellent. And there's such a long list of people that have gotten into this direct marketing. These places have been very busy, and, you know, I think there's just a need for more.
What are the barriers you see to there being more medium and small sized processors?
I think the biggest barrier, and I've watched this over my 30 years of farming, it's that the small and medium sized processors really started getting, you know, bought up and squeezed out by, you know, some really large processing plants. And that's what they call vertical integration. You know, it turns into a weakening of the amount of buyers that the mid-sized farmers had to sell to. And as there got to be fewer buyers of livestock, the prices started obviously going down. And then it got to a point of, you know, where a lot of this is contract farming, where a farmer who's going to raise chickens is typically has to have a contract with the processor, and they have a lot of influence, you know, from, you know, all the way from the hatching all up through every process of poultry production. And that's happened also in hogs. It's been happening in the cattle market too. And we have so few processors in the country. And so we either have like a multinational scale processing or local, and there's very little in the medium sized distributorship. So that's something that I think we need some incentives. I think we need some regulatory change too, to not just encourage it, but to really demand that we have better food security through that marketing and through a true market.
And through actually enforcing antitrust laws.
Yes, that too. I mean, we have, I think, several avenues that our federal government can help out. I think with, you know, looking at the foreign ownership of a lot of this processing and just the lack of, you know, number of players in these markets is, we can't consolidate to the point where, you know, we're just dependent on, you know, 3 to 5 companies. It just, we have to have a much, much more distributed ownership in the country, in farming and in the processing.
I know you're a member owner of Organic Valley, or a farmer owner. What do you guys call yourselves?
Yeah, we call it a member owner. So we're farmers that are member owners of our Organic Valley Crop Cooperative. So in our family's history, we've been involved in quite a few cooperatives. You know, we support local cooperatives like our feed mill, our fuel supply. There's just a lot of avenues that farmers have had to be in co-ops. The biggest thing is typically the marketing of, in our case, dairy. So we've been very active and, you know, served on, you know, several elected capacities within each of these co-ops we've been in. And I think it's very important to have a farmer voice and have the elections, have representation, have rules and bylaws and, you know, a process. So the co-op that I'm most involved with right now is Crop, which is Organic Valley, doing, you know, milk, meat, produce. And it's really, to me, very important to stay connected with our leadership of the co-op and then, you know, with our farmers throughout the nation. It's incredible to see that type of, you know, democratic representation in action. And I think it's been a huge reason why a lot of the organic markets have been successful, you know, in building co-ops and, you know, having a lot of food co-ops throughout the country too, to retail. And it's really been a growing thing on that scale.
Yeah, so more cooperatively managed processing facilities could help to rebuild that part of the food system then.
Absolutely. In Wisconsin, there's the Wisconsin Grass-Fed Beef Co-op, which has been going at, I would say, at least 10 years. And that's definitely getting a lot of the grass-fed producers lined up with the market.
Are you involved in that one?
I have not been involved because you need to have a beef specific breed to be in there, and we have dairy cattle. But within the crop, there's also a meat co-op. So we're kind of involved in both the dairy and the beef co-op side within crop. So I actually sold a steer this morning, and the thing is, the price for that hasn't changed. They say that the demand has been pretty steady and they're holding to their contracts, which, you know, the trucker actually said that some of these local markets aren't even taking cattle right now. So hopefully we'll be able to maintain a price. One thing about, you know, being a dairy farmer that a lot of people don't realize is that we're also very involved with the beef side. So we want to have our cows obviously be in really good health, you know, throughout their life. And, you know, they're going to have calves, which either we're going to raise these calves as steers, you know, or potentially bulls. But typically it's for either steers or the calves get sold to another grower. So it provides really a pretty healthy amount of our income, you know, just doing a good job with the beef end of it.
What kind of things, the way that you farm, being a grass-based dairy, makes you more resilient to shocks like this?
I think a foundation of the, you know, the grass-based and organic farming is, you know, really looking at everything from a conservation mindset. And we've tried doing so many practices that, you know, that have shown resilience in a lot of research. And I see that. We've soil tested for years. You know, we see the organic matter grows all the time. We've really focused a lot on building diversity in our pastures and the forage. And we've built what I would call a permanent system where we really get down to it. We may not even need to bring in, you know, any fertilizer or seed. You know, we could be completely self-sustaining for at least a time. And I would be pretty confident to say that if we had major disruptions of supply like seed and fertilizer, you know, we have on our own farm through manure management, through composting, you know, through even spreading in our fields, through the movement of cattle, you know, we have good fertility distributed throughout our entire farm. And also we're planting fertility. We have, you know, a lot of legume, clover, you know, a good mix of nitrogen fixers out there. So we can take atmospheric nitrogen and provide it to the grasses. And, you know, we have this whole life cycle that is trying to replicate nature and the resilience nature has had over such a long time. So when we study all these native herding populations around the world, like from bison to wildebeest, they've spent millennia really building healthy soil and clean water, and at the same time supporting massive amounts of wildlife. So I think we've got a golden opportunity here to emphasize that style of farming. As we're speaking here, it's actually Earth Day, and I've been listening to some of the podcasts from the Nelson Institute at UW-Madison, and it was just very interesting how this all ties in. You know, we're looking at a shift in a lot of these systems, you know, looking at our energy balance, you know, how much can we cut back in fuel usage, how efficient can we really be, and I think we've got a lot of evidence that we're getting there, and we're actually sequestering carbon with these grasslands. And I think we can build a you know, probably a much better balance in the ag system. We need to have grain production. We need to have food crops. But I think if we can integrate a lot of this, bring the animals back into these systems, do a lot more cover crops, do a lot more soil conservation and soil health building. And really, if we're going to have government programs, which we obviously have a lot of that, like with crop insurance and right now with these aid packages that are being talked about, like right now, today, a $19 billion package. I think if we built more diversity into our system and into the number of enterprises we had on the farm. So if you're a grain farmer, if you could actually make some money raising livestock, that would be so huge, and it would be beneficial to all farmers. And I think, you know, just with the farmers I know, out of every type of farm, they want to have some way to do what they love and make a profit at it. And if we could somehow incentivize that, really the true value of soil health and our ecosystem services from farming, and in rewarding farmers for doing that type of a job, I think it would be a great thing. The closest thing that I know of is like the CSP program through NRCS, the Conservation Stewardship Program. And I'd like to see a shift to a lot more of that, as well as being market driven too. I went to university to study first ecology, and then I kind of shifted over to business. And the thing that I like about organics especially is that there's an environmental focus plus an economic justice focus.
How have you been involved with Dairy Together?
Wisconsin Farmers Union was really looking to have, you know, some ideas on supply management to get really help out dairy farmers and try to build some unity in the industry to help get a positive change. You know, we've seen multiple years of declining farm numbers, you know, people having to sell off their herds, and it has truly been a crisis. We had a time period where, you know, some of the milk buyers were not going to be picking up milk and, you know, giving 2 weeks notice in some cases to the farmers. And yeah, we've known that there's a big problem. So the initial stage was looking at around the world, you know, where are some places that are doing a good job in supply management. I had just brought up that the way that organic markets have done supply management would be a good thing to look at. The other thing that was looked at too is like how a whole nation has done that. And, you know, that example was Canada. So the initial meeting started out with some Canadian farmers coming down and sharing with American farmers what was happening there. So they got a lot of really good input from farmers up front, and then through a process over the last few years, just had more meetings, more conversation, you know, weekly meetings and conferences, trips and different events throughout the country. And a lot of people have gotten interested and gotten involved, you know, all the way from, you know, not just the farmers now, but like co-ops and different people within the milk industry. We've had economists, you know, get interested and help bring some information. And I think ultimately the goal is to get policy developed with everybody's input and actually get a good supply management system in place on a national scale. I think that would ultimately, you know, help out throughout the dairy industry, both conventional and organic, because we are both going to have success or failure at the same time. We both need to be healthy organic partners with a lot of conventional processors on a lot of things. You know, dairy is just a very important, not only business, but a very important product and healthy choice for people. So we want to really have a healthy industry all around.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time, Kevin.
All right. Thank you, Chuck.
Thanks again to Bobby Wilson and Kevin Mahalko, and thank you for listening to the Moses Organic Farming Podcast. Moses is a nonprofit that educates farmers in sustainable and organic agriculture. Free resources for Moses include the Organic Broadcaster newspaper and the guidebook for organic certification. Call the Organic Answer Line to ask a specialist about organic farming and certification questions at 888-90-MOSES or visit mosesorganic.org/ask. You can call or email the answer line to talk to Kevin Mahalko about grazing, forage, dairy, beef, cooperatives, organic certification, and much more. Our show is sponsored by Gemplers, a family-owned online farm and home store, providing farmers with commercial-grade tools, equipment, and supplies for the toughest outdoor tasks. For a 20% discount, enter GEMORG04 at checkout. Expires May 15, 2020. Terms and conditions apply. Visit Gemplers.com. If you have any questions about today's episode or have ideas for future episodes, please contact me at chuck@mosesorganic.org. Next week's show is about using social media for your farm business, and that idea came about from a conversation with a farmer just the other day, so please give me your input. Our theme song is Summerfields by The Tenements. Our show is now available in all podcast apps, so make sure to subscribe, rate, and review it. It helps people find the show. Thanks again for listening.
I'm on mom.